Welcome, everyone, to episode 398 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to sort through the very crowded Western Conference. The two LA teams are at the top. No one's surprised there. After that, it's a total mess. So we're going to try to figure out which of these teams are actually good and which ones might fall back to earth in the coming weeks. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. We are also being supported today by Manscaped, so get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you.
So it's actually more than 20% because you also save on the shipping.
There you go.
Yeah.
And on that note is my very thrifty co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going?
You know what? It's going well. It is going well. I've been a little bit sad on behalf of the NBA, though. A lot of games being postponed. Yeah. A bunch of injuries, unfortunately. So that's a little disappointing, but ultimately, I've enjoyed like the quality of games out there, and you know I like what I'm seeing this season. Everything you know taking into consideration. What the hell is there? Something else? Oh right, the world is no longer broken.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but we have a little more hope than we did.
I would say a little bit more than just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's funny, right? I can't really put my finger on it. It seems like there was this orange cloud just hanging over the entire world for approximately 4 years. And now that's gone.
I am begrudgingly recording this podcast instead of listening to Tony Fauci's first press conference because he's apparently just roasting right now, which is amazing. But yes, it is a new day, and hopefully things will somewhat return to normalcy at some point. But yeah, you're right to bring up the postponements. Woj put out a story earlier today saying the NBA has kind of changed how they're handling all of the postponements now, and you know the Grizzlies are sidelined for 3 games while they contact trace. So it sounds like that is the standard moving forward. We will hit Memphis a little bit later, but Mort, you also brought up injuries, and we have to start, unfortunately, with the Portland Trailblazers out west, who were...
Are they ever healthy, Brian?
It really does not feel that way, because no. CJ McCollum is now out for at least 4 weeks with a small foot fracture and a mid-foot sprain. Yusuf Nurkic went down, I believe, 2 days earlier with a fractured right wrist. He is now out for 6 weeks. And McCollum in particular had been on fuego to start the year. Yeah. I mean, almost 27 points a game on 47% shooting, 4.8 threes per game on 44.1% shooting from deep, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. I mean, he was looking at a potential all-star berth. I think that's probably out the window given the amount of time he's about to miss. But who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the Blazers will just get 2 weeks off for COVID reasons, so maybe not. What do you think the Blazers do until McCollum and Nurkic return? I mean, Damian Lillard is amazing, but he can only do so much. So who needs to move up in the rotation in their place?
Oh, God, that's such a bait question, that one right there.
I'm waiting for you to take it.
Know the answer. Yeah. No, look, this is a chance for the young players to come in and just get some reps, I think. I'm not going to sit here and predict that Anthony Simons is going to turn into a star or anything, but like I want him to get reps. This is his third year. He was kind of disappointing last year. I think it's time just to give him some more minutes and like let's see if the maturity has hit. you know, obviously Gary Trent Jr. Mm-hmm. I think he should always play more. That's been a thing for me, though. Like, this year he's played 24 minutes per game. He's basically playing a half. And when I watch him play, he has, like, a positive impact on the game because he's a good defender. Sometimes he borders on really good. Like, it's at the point where you go, oh my god, this could be something special in a couple of years. And the shooting is there. It's reliable. He doesn't do a whole lot else, but it's just not in the cards for him necessarily to do that. Like, it's not a part of the scheme. Mm-hmm. But I want to see him get more minutes. I want to see Derrick Jones get more touches. He's already starting, which I think is fine, but I want to see him get more touches. I think he can do some damage. Maybe we should also think about turning Robert Covington back into an NBA player at some point.
That was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That has not gone well so far. 31% from the field. over 14 games, that's not great. 30% from three. You know, he still brings the defense, which is good. But offensively, he's been horrid. And something I want to bring up, which is kind of a sore subject, Brian, is, you know, we always tug up Jusuf Nurkić on this podcast mm-hmm. because he's objectively good. This year, offensively, he's been a good passer, but for Jusuf Nurkić as a scorer this year, it's been less than pretty.
Yeah.
Enes Kanter instead has just been so much better, much more productive offensively. Of course, defensively, he's been a sieve. It's not gone great there, as per usual. But offensively, he's just so much more reliable. Mm-hmm. High percentage shots, can hit his free throws. You know, great offensive rebounder. So you might want to consider, if you're the Blazers, just to amp up those minutes significantly so, which leads me to my next guy, Harry Giles, who I then want to see come in and back up Kanter more and get more minutes. Youth movement, hope for internal improvement for the guys who haven't really delivered a whole lot, and then Kanter, I guess. And hope that maybe one out of three games, it's just Dame time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the best case scenario at this point. I mean, I think it's safe to say Kanter, he's started two games so far this season. He's going to be the Nurkić replacement. I think it's, you know, not to say he's going to replace his impact defensively, but, you know, he's really the best option they have in terms of a pure big. So that one feels pretty easy to pencil in. For McCollum, who would you put Gary Trent in his place? Would you put Rodney Hood in his place? Would you stick with Robert Covington in the starting lineup? Or are you getting a little nervous about him? You know, like, do you value the defense that he brings enough to overcome this 31.4% shooting? Like, how do you manage this rotation 2-4?
So it really comes down to, I think, what you want off the bench. It's a good question, but it really boils down to what you prefer as an NBA team, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want your offense coming off the bench? Then I think Rodney Hood should be the guy coming off the pine. He started against the Spurs last game, though, and put up at 21, to his credit. But, you know, offensively, he's a guy who can take and make shots. So if that's your way, you should basically just start Gary Trent and get the defense rolling immediately. I'm also kind of curious to see what extended minutes with a Gary Trent and Robert Covington duo could do. I think there's some potential there, especially if Derrick Jones Jr. also breaks out a little bit more. That could be an interesting, you know, three-headed defensive trio right there. So it really depends on who you are as a team. I personally would start Gary Trent.
Yeah, I think I would too, because it's worth noting the Blazers right now rank 28th in terms of defensive rating. A lot of that is in part because of the combination of Kanter and Carmelo Anthony coming off the bench, and those two guys together were just horrific. So if you're looking for silver linings, if you are a Blazers fan, a despondent Blazers fan out there looking for silver linings, one silver lining might be this is going to force Terry Stotts not to play those two guys as much together. I mean, maybe we get Kanter in the starting lineup alongside Trent, Covington, Derrick Jones, Anthony Hood, and then Harry Giles and Simons off the bench.
That, who the hell is Carmelo Anthony and Rodney Hood? That's what you're going.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought you brought up a brand new name, like Anthony Hood. I was like, what?
No. Carmelo, Rodney Hood, Harry Giles, Simons off the bench, and yeah, I think it's probably a more balanced rotation that way.
Yeah.
So it's possible that they survive this, but I mean, more the West is the West as always. Like the Blazers are tied for fifth right now with the Warriors are 8-6, but they're one game ahead of the Denver Nuggets at 7-7. So if they, for 4 weeks without both of these guys at least, and possibly, if not probably longer, do you think they can kind of just even stay afloat at 500 until these guys come back?
They have Damian Lillard, so yes.
They do.
I mean, I'm just never going to count against him. We've done that before, and I've been burned on that plenty of times. So I've just learned my lesson. And even if they crash and burn, I'm not going to sit there and say, "Oh, then I should have voted against them." Like, it's Dame, man. It's like he can put up 60.
Yeah,
that's what he can do. He can have stretches where he averages 50. Like he's done that before. He's incredible. He's insane. The thing for me though is, this is just further proof of why I hate when we do the whole where are these teams going to finish in the NBA rankings before the season starts, because you always assume health. And we both were like, yeah, the Blazers could actually be like maybe the second best team in the regular season. Like, rah, 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 rah. But like, then as soon as it starts, like 14 games into the season, oh, down goes two starters.
Right. Down goes their second and third best player.
Right, and then of course their major acquisition is shooting 31% from the floor.
Right,
so like it's just so difficult. But this is the league. It's the way that it is. But the fact that they have the same record as Golden State right now is just baffling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing working in their favor is if you look at their upcoming schedule.
Yeah,
Knicks, Thunder, Rockets, Bulls. They have two tough ones at Milwaukee, at Philly. Then Knicks, Hornets, Magic, Philly, Cavs, Dallas, OKC, New Orleans, Washington. And then toward the end of February, you get Phoenix, Denver, Lakers. But,
right.
All things considered, that's a pretty survivable stretch. Not that there are many gimmies in the NBA right now. I mean, I think even the Pistons at 3-11, like they are a bad team, but they're competitive most nights. Like they aren't getting annihilated most nights. They're at least frisky enough in the fourth quarter to annoy you before falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not saying like the Knicks or the Thunder are a schedule win. They aren't, but they're also not the Lakers or the Clippers where it's like, oh, we're going to get our brains beaten in because we don't have two of these starters. Like I think they potentially could stay around 500 in this stretch at least long enough for CJ to come back, but it's got to start with defense. I mean, if they aren't getting stops, if they keep playing defense as poorly as they have for the first month or so of the season, I mean, not only are they going to fall out of the top eight of the West, they might even fall out of the play-in mix for now.
Yeah, I mean, it's either or, right? Like maybe you start with defense, or you just accept, well, we don't have the pieces to do that, so let's just gun. And can you do that without CJ is the big question. Like, probably not. Right. I mean, it would be Dame going off. Cantor can hold his own offensively. Like, if he gets extended minutes, I'm not even joking when I'm putting up these numbers here. The dude could average 20-17 in extended minutes. Like,
yeah,
defensively, he'd be horrid, but he can put up points.
On a per 36 basis right now, he's at 18-17. So that's not far off.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Carmelo, to some extent, can still fill it up here and there. It has to be under the right circumstances. Rodney Hood, again, he's had a really rough start to the season, but then he started and broke out for 21. So this could be a page turner. Maybe Anthony Simons. And here's the thing. I don't know if this is hot takey, but when I watch Gary Trent play, I kind of have the same feeling as I did with OG Anunoby. In the whole sense of he should be shooting more.
Mm-hmm.
He should be getting more shots. And with OG, I was like, from three. Like, he's a 3-and-D guy, so more threes. I still think Gary Trent Jr. should get more threes, but I kind of want to see him do more stuff as well. I am not out on him as a pick-and-roll player, not because he's not a great passer, but he can finish on them. I don't have the percentage up for me, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know if he's highly efficient in that category. But from what I've seen, he can run it. So maybe it's a question of getting reps in.
But, I mean, just look at what he did in the bubble. You know, a lot of these guys, that wasn't sustainable. And it's an 8-game sample, so take that for what it's worth. But he shot, you know, 51.6 overall, 50.7 from three, averaged almost 17 points a game, and of his 11.4 shots per game, 8.4 were from deep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, with CJ out in particular, that's what, 20 shots a game that need to be redistributed? So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you got to figure he and Cantor are going to get a lot of them for now until Robert Covington remembers how to shoot a basketball, which will hopefully come at some point. I mean, I know he's streaky, but this is a bit much.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Yeah. This is objectively bad.
Right.
There's just no other way to say it. And I hate saying that because I love Robert Covington, but he's been awful. By the way, when he was traded to Houston, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that it would only last 29 games?
No. I mean, I don't blame Houston for cashing out knowing what happened, but... Yeah, that was did not seem like a short-term acquisition. Then again, I wouldn't have thought James Harden would be on the Brooklyn Nets right now. So
yeah, exactly. But it's just crazy to me when I look at like his career, because like 70 games with the Minnesota Timberwolves, 29 with Houston, 14 now with Portland, and I saw the Portland fans already starting to make up fake trades. It's like, I don't want Covington to be, you know, become journeyman Robert Covington.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Well, let's go to a team that is a much better surprise.
Mm-hmm.
The San Antonio Spurs.
Oh, God, this is fan service, so we can get Jesse involved. That is just what you're doing.
In part, yes, but I mean, also, they are 8-7 this year. They are the number 8 seed. We're recording this on Thursday. They are currently the number 8 seed in the West.
Yeah.
And
DeMar DeRozan is... basically, has he become a full-time point guard? It certainly feels that way.
A point guard power forward?
It's so weird. Like,
I like it.
Yeah, it's working out. And he's also taking, you know, the 2 threes per game, which, you know, you can argue he should be taking more, but when he's hitting it at you know, 33%, like, well, okay. It's like the occasional three, but it might creep up just enough that defenses are starting to go, Maybe we should guard him further.
Right. It's he's never going to be a high volume, super accurate 3-point shooter. But if you're pulling the trigger enough where it's like, oh, okay, we have to respect this shot more than just, what did he do last year? Like, 35. Yeah. He had 35 total attempts in 68 games last year. He's at 27 in 13 games this year. He's already matched his season total in terms of made threes last year. He had 9. He's at 9 this year. The year before, 7 of 45 in 77 games. This is in the 2018-19 season. So he has already surpassed his entire season total in terms of made threes from 2 years ago. Kudos.
I love the fact that we're still talking about DeMar DeRozan and the 3-point shot. We started this podcast 5 years ago, and we're still there. My God.
It's a preview to what we'll be talking about in 3 years with Ben Simmons. I'm really excited.
So, do you think that LaMarcus Aldridge is going to get another $24 million next year?
Something tells me no. Keldon Johnson, on the other hand.
Yeah.
He's been... Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's going to get most improved player love, because I think he violates your rules anyway as a second-year guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been really good.
He has. He's been good, and he's been hitting threes. He's getting to the line. He is... an outstanding rebounder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, just a 6'5"
guy.
No, yeah, but I mean, you can when you watch him play, he just rebounds outside of his area. He's really aggressive, and you know what? It seems that is just what the Spurs are looking for when they draft guys. Like when you look at Deontay as well,
mm-hmm.
Like, they just want guys who can board. It doesn't matter if you're a point guard, doesn't matter if you're big, just board. I mean, that's what they want. And, you know, when you go all the way back to Kawhi, that was his primary skill coming into the, as well. I think I kind of figure out what the Spurs want to do. They just want guys who can board, and they build around that.
I mean, they're a pretty well-rounded team, right? Like, Portland is so top-heavy with Dame and CJ, and then I think the next closest guy was averaging 12 points a game, and I think that was Carmelo. The Spurs right now, DeMar leads the team with 20.2, but you have seven guys who are actually in the rotation, seven guys who have played at least 12 games each, are averaging at least 20 minutes each. All seven have at least 11 points a game. Like, this is not a star-centric, you know, if this one guy goes down, we're totally screwed here. It's just like a nice, well-built, well-rounded team.
Yeah.
And we're seeing FIBA Patty Mills, which we were promised before the season. He said he's going to get back into that mindset. He's at 14 points a game, shooting 42.6 from deep. I mean, the Spurs are still in the place that we've talked about for years now, where it's like, they're trying to toe the line between win now with these vets, and, you know, they've got all these young guys. Derek White's hurt right now, so they're doing this. He's played one game so far, so they're doing all of this without one of their best young guys, which is even more impressive. But I mean, where do you see the Spurs in terms of what we were talking about this last episode? I think where, you know, the play-in tournament might change how teams approach the trade deadline. Because now you have 10 spots to compete for a postseason berth rather than 8. So even if the Spurs don't think they're going to be one of the top 8, as long as they think they could be one of the top 10, they can bank on, all right, well, we can win 2 games, and we can get in the playoffs. But, you know, you have DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, Patty Mills, Rudy Gay, all of whom are over 30, all of whom are on expiring contracts. So you have to balance, okay, all of these guys could walk this summer, and we could have nothing to show for any of them.
Exactly. And that's where the conversation needs to start. Because, unless I'm mistaken, that Boston TPE fits with DeRozan, right?
It's $28.5 million, and
then it fits with DeRozan, because he's at $27.7 million.
There you go, yeah.
Now, I know that Boston would be paying through the nose, just in terms of tax and all that, but if there's a team out there that could survive, like, the lack of spacing from, you know, a guy like DeMar, it's probably them, because Kemba is going to be back. He's, like, a high-volume three-point shooter. Jaylen Brown has become a very adequate three-point shooter. Jason Tatum is a good three-point shooter. And DeMar is, you know, that playmaker that they in a way need, because they had some playmaking from Gordon Hayward that has now left them. DeMar can come in and change that a little bit, and he can get to the line, like, he can get buckets when necessary, so he can, you know, you can make you stagger his minutes so he plays, you know, pretty heavily with the secondary rotation. I wouldn't hate that if I'm Boston. And then, of course, you can attach, you know, guys to that. Like, you can say, you know what, or draft picks for that matter. You can go, we'll absorb DeMar's contract, but we'll also send out some picks or some young guys. Like, the Spurs really have nothing to lose on that.
Yeah, well, I guess we could approach it from two sides here. One, if you're the Spurs, do you even entertain the idea? I mean, if you get blown away with, like, a Drew Holiday-esque offer where someone's giving you 3 picks and 2 pick swaps or whatever, of course.
Right.
But if it's like, if Boston calls up for DeMar DeRozan or for LaMarcus Aldridge and says, we'll give you, you know, a top 20 protected first or something, like, you know, something crappy, like something that's,
right.
That is a pick that you'll get a guy on a rookie contract, cool, but, like, not super high value. Do you prioritize that, knowing that these guys could walk this summer? Do you prioritize that over making a possible run at the playoffs? And then, you know, there's no guarantee that these guys walk. There's always a chance they resign.
Is there, with DeMar, It really felt like he had a foot out the door, though.
Yeah, I mean, based on the reporting for Jabari Young of CNBC, especially, has I haven't seen it as much this year, I guess, but pre-bubble, there was a lot of chatter about DeMar not being super happy there. So he might be the one exception, but right. I mean, Patty
and
LaMarcus.
LaMarcus is averaging like 13.5 points. Ain't nobody going to trade for him.
I mean, Boston or Toronto might be desperate enough given how their bigs have played so far.
You really think that Boston would take a chance on a 35, almost 30? Yeah, well, he'll be 35 this year. Or he is 35, but he won't turn 36 until the end of the year. You think they would take a chance on him? I don't think that fits. I think you would want the more productive player, right?
I guess it depends on, A, how much you have to give up for either guy.
Yeah.
I would think Aldridge would come cheaper than DeRozan at this point.
You presume correctly here,
I would hope. Yes. And B, what you're hoping to accomplish if you're Boston or any other team for that matter. I mean, are you looking to add to a strength, or are you looking to bolster a weakness looking ahead to a potential playoff matchup against Joel Embiid or Giannis Antetokounmpo or Anthony Davis, where you're like, oh crap, like we just don't have...
Yeah, they really struggled with Philly last playoffs, you're right.
Well, I mean...
Boston Celtics really had a hard time getting past the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, you're
Embiid
right.
Embiid ate How their lunch last night, 42 points. Like,
oh my god, he ate their lunch during a regular season game? You know what? I'm convinced.
I'm just saying, they don't have anyone to guard. Like, who's going to guard Giannis on that team?
Nobody. Nobody can guard Giannis. Nobody can guard Embiid. Doesn't matter. Like, as long as you can shut down everyone else, and, like, Lord knows that they can. It's fine.
I guess. I mean, they might just want another... Like, I don't know. Having seen Tristan Thompson do absolutely nothing for a good chunk of this season so far, I think they would probably want some additional depth up front. Again, it comes down to the price, but if they use that trade exception, I would guess they would use it on a big. Maybe it's not LaMarcus, but that would be my impression.
Yeah. I mean, time will tell. I think if push came to shove and they actually had a take your pick kind of situation, I think DeRozan would be very clearly their target. Also because they just go all in on the wings, which I love, by the way. This is one of the things that I when I look at how team construction is, it's so tough to find wings. So I always look at that when, you know, looking at young teams, and I go, well, what's the next step here? Like, for example, with Dallas and other young teams, like, get a wing. Get wings. It can't hurt you.
Yeah.
And so why not? But you know what? I think this... To actually pivot into something else regarding the Spurs, the question here is, do you want to actually see if you can make it to the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you willing to sacrifice that, knowing full well that DeMar is gone and you're not going to get anything for him? Like, that's... This is what it comes down to. And, you know, so many people would argue, yo, getting to the playoffs is great experience. And I don't disagree. But if there's a team that's been to the playoffs for a long time, you know what? It's fine. Like, you know what? It's the Spurs. It's fine. Just get some assets in there. It's okay just to have a year or two, in this case, where you just, you know, accumulate assets. It's okay. You can have that and then return to the playoffs next year. And besides, I'm not even sure that they would be necessarily that much worse without DeRozan.
Ooh. Now, Jesse, I'm sorry. I'm not on board with that, so don't take your anger out on me on Twitter.
No. I'm not saying addition by subtraction. I'm not going that far.
Yeah.
They would be worse, but I think the drop won't necessarily be as big as some people might make it out to be.
I mean, that's possible. I guess the question for them is, do you think that you can win your way through a play-in tournament to get into the playoffs? And if that's the case, you're probably playing one of the Clippers or Lakers.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think you're going to be super competitive against either team, with all due respect.
Yeah, no, I'm generally not a big fan of, hey, let's scrap our way to a series where we're going to get our brains beaten in four times in a row. I think people are putting so much emotional context on just making the playoffs. And in certain situations, very specific situations, I do see the value in that. But this one isn't it. This is where I think if you can get something for DeRozan, and look, whatever you can get for LaMarcus Aldridge,
Rudy Gay, Patty Mills too. I think those guys will have value to contenders. I think the Spurs are in great position to be sellers at the trade deadline if they want to be. The question is whether they want to be.
I mean, Pop doesn't want to be.
Right.
Of course he doesn't want that. But, I mean, this is where management has to take, has to make a decision on what the future holds. And if that is long-term play and trying to see if you can get something out of these guys, in terms of asset acquisition, then go for it. I mean, you gauge the market, you see what's out there. And look, if you determine that the return you're going to get is just so limited that it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, you would rather just go to the playoffs, look, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there isn't a wrong answer here, but like, I'm basically just fighting the idea that if they get offered something good, like let's say someone actually offers them a package with DeRozan with a couple first rounders or whatever, and they go, no, because we want to get absolutely skull something the first round by the Lakers, like, then no, that's a bad idea. But if the return is just extremely limited, go by all means, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it totally comes down to what teams are willing to offer. But I think Patty and Rudy, both in terms of salary and value, it will probably be easier to move those guys than it will DeRozan and Aldridge, if only because a lot of teams are limited in how much they can give up. Like, a lot of contenders have already maxed out in terms of the picks they can send out.
Yeah, 15 teams, if memory serves.
Yeah, I think, was it Bobby Marks or Windhorse had that story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. By the way, how pissed are the Blazers right now? They drafted Patty Mills fully expecting this, and it took him until age 32 and for a different franchise.
Yeah. FIBA Patty finally came over 12 years after he got drafted.
Way too late, at least. That's for damn sure. I mean, good on Patty. For having a good year, but dude, every team you've been on, over the past 12 years, like, could have used that. Come on, man.
Yeah. All right, wait, let's switch over to the team that is currently the number 3 seed in the Western Conference, only a half game behind the two LA teams, the Utah Jazz, currently riding a 6-game winning streak, I believe a league high 6-game winning streak.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something before we start.
Mm-hmm.
If I told you before the season that the Utah Jazz would be one of the most devastatingly accurate 3-point shooting teams in the league, what would your reaction have been?
Donovan Mitchell is shooting, I guess, or Joe Ingles is shooting like 10 threes a game finally.
Right. But, like, this is a reality that we're looking at. It is just astounding, like, how many threes they're hitting and, like, the success rate and, like, the spacing. I can't even explain it, really, like, how this came about. And one thing is Mike Conley has, come back from wherever he was last year and, like, got acclimated with the team.
Yep.
But it's not just him. The ball is just moving so well. That wraparound pass that Donnie had to, I think it was Bogdanović at the top, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, good Lord. Like, that is a pass we never really saw before that we didn't know he had in his bag. That's interesting. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be like a full-time point guard because he's clearly not, but just having that in your bag. I mean, you can see how that opened up Zach LaVine in Chicago this year. Same applies for Mitchell. If that pass is there, that just takes you to a whole other level.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz right now, number 1 in the league in 3-point makes per game at 16.5. They're third in 3-point attempts, 41.1 per game. third in three-point percentage at 40.1%. So it's not just one guy getting hot. Like, Donnie's shooting 38.5%. Jordan Clarkson's at 43%. Conley's at 41.1%.
They have six guys hitting over two or... Well, okay, Royce O'Neal 1.9. But, you know, I'm close rounding enough. Up. Yeah. Yeah, the close enough. Six guys hitting 2 threes a game. Come on. That's insane.
And Bojan Bogdanović is not shooting all that well. He's shooting well from deep at 38.7%, but only 38.9% overall, which figures to go up, hopefully, at some point.
Yeah. True. Like, from two, he's not been really that efficient, but he's making up for it from the long balls, and that's what he comes in to do. So what's funny to me, though, is that for such a great three-point shooting team, they're a super weak free throw team. And I get that a lot of that is Gobert, who's really having a down year shooting the ball from the stripe. But I mean, yeah, like Mike Conley at an even 70? Like, what's that about? But no, I love the way the flows. The defense, I think we need to get into, because it's not just the three-point shot. It's the cohesiveness. It's the fact that they were played together before. Mm-hmm. This, like, they rolled this team back. And remember how high we were last year on this team.
Yeah. This is the Utah team we thought we were getting last year.
Exactly. They are super, like, well acquainted now. They understand patterns, like each other's patterns, movements. Like, hell, you know, Jordan Clarkson, a guy who I would say is not specifically, you know, team oriented always, he's like making pretty sound passes now. Like, he's hitting guys in their shooting pocket. Mm-hmm. Like, he's delivering the ball just right for certain guys. That's, I don't know what happened here. Quinn Snyder gave them, I don't know, a special potion or something. Now they all have ESP. I don't know. It's working. It's really fun to watch.
Well, I mean, we said this going into the season, that the teams that didn't undergo major offseason overhauls, given the shortened training camp, given the shortened preseason, given all these COVID restrictions,
yeah,
you have an advantage. The continuity that you had, that you developed last year, I mean, you said it yourself. Like, Mike Conley really struggled last year, and then he gets into the bubble, and he finally starts looking like Mike Conley, and that's carried over to this year. And, mm-hmm. I mean, Mike Conley played a grand majority of his career in Memphis in a certain system. So, of course, it took time for him to figure out these brand new teammates, brand new coaching staff, brand new system. And finally, the game started slowing down for him again in the bubble. And now it has this year as well. So, I mean, you know, this is the value of bringing these guys back. Their biggest offseason acquisition was Derek Favors, who was also played with these guys for a long time. So it's like, Jordan Clarkson, as you mentioned, I mean, they got him, they picked him up early last year in a trade, and he's been sensational. I mean, he's deservedly getting Sixth Man of the Year buzz, even though I know you're going to hate it because he's just getting it from his scoring.
Buckets. Yeah. I'm not going to touch on that. I will ask you this about Favors. Now, admittedly, I have not read up on this whatsoever, so this is a genuine question because I simply don't know. Mm-hmm. But do you think he would still have signed back with Utah if he knew that he was only going to get 60 minutes per game? Because he's not playing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, if no other team was willing to offer him the full MLE, and he's like, you know what? In terms of minutes per dollar, this is actually great value.
That it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. I would assume they were pretty straight with him in saying, we don't envision you as a starter. We think you can be a great backup to Rudy, and you'll maybe play alongside him a little bit. But we want to stay smaller. We want to have, you know, O'Neal, Ingles, Bogdanović. Those are going to be our main guys at the three and the four. So...
Oh, wait, that's interesting, because I feel as though we've talked about this before. The whole wings as fours, Brian, I think that's a topic we've broached a couple of times.
Occasionally.
It's fun how that works. It seems like good teams who are doing that, kind of, they win with it. Huh.
Unless you have an Anthony Davis, in which case all bets are off.
Yeah. Right. But that's different. It's just, you know, the little pluck to... You know, the YouTube channel that I have where I made a video called, you know, the NBA Power Forward Position is Dead, like the old school one. And I think I hit that out of the ballpark, because look at how teams are playing now. Like Royce O'Neal 5 years ago, power forward? No. Right. God, no. Wouldn't have been classified as that. Bojan Bogdanovic? Hell no. Yeah.
Royce O'Neal 5 years ago would not be starting on a good team.
That's true. He's actually really good. I mean, yeah. I don't get why, like whenever I see trade Twitter, you know, try to improve teams, it seems like when they go to Utah, it's always, well, Royce O'Neal is not producing like a whole lot. Yeah, well, that's not true. He's just high on the pecking order.
Like, they're treating him like a throw-in instead of like an actually valuable member of the team.
It's obviously it's people who look just at the per game stats, right?
Sure.
But I always find that pretty hilarious, because it shows that there isn't a whole lot of context to him. Like obviously his primary strength is, you know, is being a 3-and-D player.
Right. Emphasis on the D, too. Like, I don't think Utah's giving up their primary wing defender for free.
Right. I saw a possession about a month ago, something along those lines, where he just switched on to, I think, 4 players on the same possession. It was just crazy. He was just, like, he was switching on to everyone. And he's so quick off his feet. And extremely intelligent. I think Royce O'Neal is a pretty good example of where the league is now compared to where it was like 10 years ago, where if you were athletic, you would get drafted, you would get automatic playing time. But now we've shifted into this more intelligence, you know, basketball IQ, positioning, like finesse kind of game. And he just, like, he gets that. He gets all of that. And then you have Quinn Snyder just, I get what you get, so here you go, playing time and lots of it.
Yeah, and he's just such a nice fit in that starting lineup, because he can take the toughest wing matchup, and he's so low usage that, you know, they're not going to run a ton of plays for Royce O'Neal, and they don't need to when you've got a Donovan Mitchell, a Mike Conley, a Bogdanovic, when you've got a guy like Ingles and Clarkson coming off the bench who are going to take more shots. Just, you know, if Royce O'Neal stands in the corner and knocks down a couple open threes a game, that's great. Otherwise, he's just going to lock up the best wing defender and spare Donovan Mitchell from having to exert himself too much on that end of the court. Like, he's a, you know, this is where all of the focus on team building, and it's like, we're seeing this a little bit with the Nets so far. It's like, let's just assemble all of the best talent and figure out the rest later. And it's like, well, you can do that, but as you know, at a certain point, you need guys to actually fit well together and act, you know, have clearly identified roles. And it's okay if there's a guy in your starting lineup who's averaging 7 points a night if he brings other things to the table, which Royce does.
Right. By the way, just to wrap up Utah, the contract extension that Jordan Clarkson signed is looking really good.
Yeah. Well, it's really good. So my question for you for Utah is, I mean, right now the Lakers and Clippers are just boat racing pretty much every team they play. Right. I think they're, you know, clearly, as they were last year, 2 best teams in the West. Is Utah the 3rd best team? I know they are by standings, but are they the biggest threat to either the Clippers or the Lakers? And could you see them beating either one of those teams in the playoffs?
Yes. It's a short answer. I think they could beat the Clippers.
Spicy. Okay.
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. The Clippers, we still don't know the full story of, you know, their inner workings. They're winning a lot on talent, but you can also see the depths they can go to at times when they just don't gel. I mean, I'm talking about like the 50-point halftime deficit to Dallas.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, look, let's be real about something. Have we ever seen a championship team do something like that?
They were without Kawhi in that game, right?
Yeah. No, they were. But, right? Oh, God. Now when you're asking me, like, I'm pretty sure they were. But even so, like, they still have Paul George.
Yeah, right. I mean, they shouldn't be down 50 at halftime.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See, now I hate when you do that, because that makes now I'm unsure.
No, it's a fair point either way that it's similar to what the Bucks are going to deal with all season, where we can see they are a great regular season team, but questions are going to exist about them in the playoffs until they prove otherwise. I mean, Harden even has this stink kind of hanging on him.
Yeah. Which is no Kawhi, by the way. You're right.
Yeah.
But still, okay. but still, when you have Paul George, you should.
Yeah.
Patrick Beverley was healthy. Serge Ibaka was healthy. Nicholas Batum, who looks like an NBA player again, is healthy. Like Reggie Jackson was available.
Yeah, and the Mavericks didn't have Kristaps, so it's, you know, not
that's true.
Kristaps and Kawhi are the same caliber player, but they were without one of their two top players as well.
Right, and I guess my thing is, we haven't seen this from Utah, right? Like, they did have a 34-point loss a couple weeks ago, or was it last week? They had a pretty bad one. Was that against Brooklyn or something like that?
Pulling it, yeah, 34 yes. against Brooklyn 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I remember that one because I saw a few Jazz guys on Twitter just lose their collective, you know what.
Sure.
And then they just started rolling. But I still think that a cohesive unit, and if you like have that and you have the talent, which I think Utah does have, they could probably take a team like the Clippers, assuming, of course, the locker room isn't where it needs to be. If at the end of the season the Clippers have figured out all their internal issues, then that becomes a different story. But please note that I did not include the Lakers in this.
Yes. Duly noted.
Yes. Can we just very briefly touch on that? We agree that this season overall is going to be slightly boring because there's no way in hell that if the Lakers they stay healthy, like there are no one to really put them off their spot, right?
I mean, I think they should be the clear favorites right now. I think they are in a tier of their own. I don't want to say there's no chance that they could lose.
All right.
I would be surprised at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Fine. That's fair phrasing. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to the Memphis Grizzlies, Mort, who at 2-6 a few weeks ago were looking like they were in some serious trouble. They have since ripped off 5 straight wins. Ja Morant is back and dynamic. They are, as we mentioned at the top of the show, they are on hiatus for a while. Their games against Portland, they're supposed to play last night and then Friday, have been postponed, and they're supposed to have a two against the Kings Sunday and Monday.
Fresh legs.
Also been fresh legs, I guess so, but Jonas Valanciunas has COVID, so that's not great.
It is not, but
he's in the... Sorry. It's not confirmed. He's just in the health and safety protocol, and they've since had 4 games canceled. So
connect
the dots if you want.
Yeah. No, but I look, it's not a wrong point to bring up, though. Like, if you have games off, you're going to have time to recuperate. Like, all your minor nagging injuries might go away.
And I guess the good thing is, I mean, we don't know what the timetable is for Jaren Jackson, Justice Winslow, but... this is 4 games that have since been postponed that will either be made up later in the season or not, but it's 4 games they probably wouldn't have had either of those guys that they might in the future. So that is a fair point.
Yeah.
And they have one against Minnesota postponed as well. So, I mean, they're supposed to have played 18 games, or by Monday, they're supposed to have played 18 games, and they're going to be at 13. So, yeah. Can we talk about Ja Morant for a second?
So no, because I mean, I just have to make sure that I understand who you want to talk about. You're talking about the guy who might be the best draft prospect from the 2019 class?
Yes, I was going to ask about that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, we're not there yet, right? Or are we?
We're damn close, there. Brian. Damn close. And look, I get the Zion appeal. I'm not going to sit here and act like we're trying to crap on Zion because I don't.
No, he's
phenomenal. Like he is truly, he's going to be a truly great player. But he just seems to have a longer road ahead, I want to say, than Ja is probably going to have.
Yeah, I think it's a really good way to put it.
Yeah. But no, let's talk about Ja. Let's talk about what he's doing because it's ridiculous.
I mean, he is just... he's so in control for a guy that young. He had 44 in the season opener against the Spurs in a game they lost. But again, I mean, he's a major reason they beat Philly and Phoenix in the last 2 games they played. You know, he only had 17 points in both games, so it doesn't necessarily stand out. But he made huge plays toward in crunch time of both of those games. And it's just like, for a guy this young, it's similar to Luka, what we saw last year. For a guy this young to have like his full control over his team in moments like that, it's just electrifying. I'm fully on the Grizzlies bandwagon even before the train gets too crowded here.
Yeah. So when he was at Murray State, obviously he was, you know, a triple double watch every single game and all that, but people just, I have this problem with the way people judged him, really, because he averaged 10 assists per game, but the thing people looked at was like, oh, the Russell Westbrook thing, because he was averaging 6.5 boards in his freshman season and 6 boards in his sophomore season. So people were way too preoccupied with the triple-double aspect instead of just realizing, oh, that doesn't matter. What really matters is his absolutely insane court vision. Like, he has the ability to make incredible passes, like out of the pick and roll, off the drive, in the air, standing still. Doesn't matter, he just finds guys.
And through three bodies. That's what's so impressive about him. He's got the lightning quick first step. He can get into the paint pretty much on command, but then he's surrounded and he's going to the rim and you think like, oh man, he's gonna get a shot blocked, and then he throws this like wraparound pass along the baseline to a wide open 3-point shooter. It's like, how the hell did he even see that guy? I DM'd you the other day and I was like, I haven't seen a guy that reminds me this much of Allen Iverson in a long time, but you know, I know he's bigger than Iverson, but just some of the finishes around the basket too.
Way more efficient than Iverson too.
That's an absurd thing to say. It's like a kid this young and you're already getting Iverson vibes from him, but like a more efficient Iverson. Like that's an all-time great player if he stays on this trajectory.
Of course, and he's only got 72 regular season games to his name, so like theoretically he hasn't even played a full NBA season yet.
Right
No, it's crazy. And you know, I get that people are caught up with the dunks from Zion and like the raw stats, which yes, they're so great, but I think it is reasonable to say that currently Ja Morant has a higher influence on the games that he plays than Zion does. And that's not to say that Zion is by any means, you know, bad or isn't there or blah blah blah. There's no hate to be found towards Zion from where we're sitting.
Right.
It's just a question of Ja being, well, hell, better. Let's just say it. Now he's better.
Yeah. I'll say this much. I don't think he's gonna have the Mike Conley best player to never make an All-Star game.
Oh Lord, no.
I think both Zion and Ja are going to be fixtures in the All-Star game for years to come. So, as you said, it's not an anti-Zion thing. It's just like, this is how good Ja Morant is. We should be paying more attention to Ja Morant rather than no one should pay any attention to Zion, because Zion's also very good.
Yeah. I have a question which I'm afraid to ask.
Okay, hit me.
Is Jaren Jackson Jr. the right running mate for Ja Morant?
Ooh. I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, because Jaren Jackson turned into such a high-volume, efficient three-point shooter, too, like, I think he could basically become what Kristaps has for Luka.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good comp. And I think you actually summed it up well. You said, I think so with a question mark. Like,
yeah.
I think that's where I am, too, because I don't know. I thought he would be... Obviously, he hasn't played this year. So, but he's been a really bad rebounder over the first two seasons of his career. Like, so bad that you have to wonder, does this mean that you can play him at the big, you know, at the big spot, like the center position moving forward? And I get the Jonas Valanciunas is there. He gobbles up a lot of boards. But even then, like, it does seem like Jaren doesn't always have the best nose for the ball and going for the glass, and I just wonder if the Grizzlies have an alternative in place where that problem is lessened.
Jay Crowder was there last year as well. He was a surprisingly good rebounder for them.
Right.
So I think
in a... Or was he a good rebounder because Jaren Jackson Jr. wasn't?
That's a fair question. I think in a higher volume role, in a higher minute role, we'll see the raw production go up. But in terms of, in terms of like total rebound percentage, Jaren Jackson was at 8.5 last year. I don't know where that ranks in terms of guys 6'11 or above, but I can imagine it's pretty low on the list.
Yeah, let's just wrap it up like this, or just sum it up like this. He's played over 3,000 career minutes, and he's just grabbed over 500 boards. Five 534 to be precise. That's not like, but he's a great shot blocker, like you said, great 3-point shooter. He's a good free throw shooter. Like, I have to assume as he ages, he only becomes more refined as a shooter and becomes one of those people who are just, you know, completely knocked down. But when I'm just concerned because he fouls a ton and he doesn't rebound. And I would be if I'm the Grizzlies, I know who my number one guy is. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna sit there and go, oh, should we at any point choose between Ja and Jaren? It's gonna be like, no, Ja, immediately, and then you build around him. So I guess my point is this: if they get an offer for Jaren at some point, and they feel the return that they're going to be getting provides better around Ja, I think they should have a meeting about it.
Yeah, I just looked this up. Last season, of the 64 guys who played a single minute, and that includes like literally 4 minutes, 64 guys, 6'11 or taller, who played a single minute, Jaren Jackson was tied for 62nd in terms of total rebounding percentage, ahead of the Lopez brothers, both Brooke and Robin, and Luke Kornet.
Oh boy, that's not great.
Lauri Markkanen, LaMarcus Aldridge, Miles Turner were the closest to him.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
Yeah, so it's a fair question. I mean, my question about the Grizzlies is more about Dylan Brooks right now.
They signed him to not easy? He shouldn't be there.
Well, I mean, they signed him to a 3-year, $35 million extension last February, and at the time, it seemed like a reasonable value. The efficiency is just not there,
and it wasn't last year either.
Yeah, like I guess you already answered. They should be having some major regrets about that contract.
I wasn't a big fan of it. I think I said when it was signed, I was like, assuming he dials down the antics, okay, but he is just taking weird shots, man. And something we also need to talk about, like Jaren, he fouls a lot.
Yeah.
Like, and you have to also ask the question, just in terms of the defense, like, it's very on and off. Is there a, like, he's going to be 25 tomorrow, actually.
Okay. Happy birthday. We're slandering you.
Yeah. But I'm wondering, like, should he just not have a higher floor? Should he not be, considering his athleticism and considering, like, his quick feet, shouldn't he just be a little bit better than what he is right now as a defender? And shouldn't he also, given age, like, just understand what a good shot is?
Well, I wonder if he's overstretched right now because of Jaren being out, because of Justice Winslow being out.
Sure, but it wasn't last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Justice was still out, or Justice wasn't on the team for most of the year. Like, I wonder if he's a guy who, if he's your number four or number five offensive option, he'll slide into more of a complementary role, and he won't feel pressure to take 15 shots a game, you know, eight of which are probably shots he would like to take back.
Right. But we agree, though, that Desmond Bane would be, like, so far prioritized if you and I were GMs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Desmond Bane is going to supplant him at some point, probably pretty soon. Maybe not this year, but like in terms of their career trajectories.
Yeah.
I think Desmond Bane is a guy who makes a lot more sense long term next to Ja Morant. So that's great. And Dylan Brooks, it's not, it's 3 years, $35 million, so it's nothing else. It's good salary matching fodder if you get involved in a trade at some point.
Agreed.
But more, do you think once they get these guys back, when they get Jaren back, and we have no idea what Justice is going to look like in, you know, with this team. We haven't seen him yet. I can't imagine he's going to play a ton of minutes right away. Do you think this Grizzlies team we should be taking seriously as potential top six in the West, or at least top seven, top eight?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it really hinges on Ja. I think it hinges on the supporting staff, just in terms of, like, can they remain as potent as they have been? You're looking at an Xavier Tillman, who's been really, really great. It's just such a small sample size. He's only played eight games, but he looks like a freaking steal.
Yeah, I'm so mad.
Yeah.
He's really good.
I would take him over Lauri Markkanen right now. Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane looks like, you know, a future full-time starter. If Jonas Valanciunas comes back and is fully healthy and there are no signs of allegedly COVID, and Brandon Clark doesn't shoot like an NBA 2K player, that's that's a start. Kyle Anderson, I want to point out though, he's been so good. Like, he's just been their, he's been their passing hub when Ja hasn't like had the ball. He's been a great rebounder. He's hit threes. Like, he's doing work. And I think just slightly like the Jazz who we talked about earlier, there's that level of cohesiveness because a lot of these guys, they know each other. They know their games. Yep. So it wouldn't surprise me if they stuck around, like, within the top six. Also wouldn't surprise me if they slipped out of that because it's still a young team, and young teams have a tendency to swing pretty wildly one way or the other. Like, right now they're on a five-game winning streak. They could, you know, they could go on a five-game losing streak because they're so young. Like, so many things can happen, especially when you have a young point guard. I know we just talked him up, but Moran is still just 21. He will have games when he's matched up against competition that is just far better. And I have to assume that he'll have games where he just struggles because of that. So I guess we'll see, but it can't hurt to be fully healthy at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, this is Draft Twitter's favorite team, and they deserve nothing but good things. They really have done pretty well between Clark, Bane, and Tillman. I mean, I know Ja and Jaren, I think, were the no-brainer picks at those spots, just given the talent on the board, given where they were. But Clark, Bane, and Tillman are all really good steals. So, like, I want to reward the Grizzlies for nailing that aspect of team building.
Well, one more thing, they traded for D'Anthony Melton, also a draft favorite. Who is? Can we just talk about a guy who's like 6'3", who's averaging almost a block per game in under 20 minutes?
It's amazing. I love this Grizzlies team.
He's so scrappy, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think for the Grizzlies to really become good, they just have to figure out their weak spots and move off of those. Like Grayson Allen, he does provide a level of toughness, but he's just so dirty.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's in their best interest to keep him around. I really don't. Because you know how when you have a player who does all these kinds of dirty things, it reflects poorly on a team also from like a referee's perspective? Like the whole team kind of becomes infected, you know, with the perception that they're all dirty because one guy is dirty. I don't want them to have that stink on them. I don't. I don't want them to have the stink of Grayson Allen on them. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, we need Desmond Bane to really just take over and break out so they can move on from Dylan Brooks and Grayson Allen as quickly as possible.
Here's what I think. I think ultimately the starting lineup is going to be Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and I don't know who the three is yet. Maybe that player is still not on the roster.
Right.
Then I think at center it's going to be Jaren, and at the four it's going to be Xavier Tillman.
Ooh.
That's future-wise, that's going to be it. And I think Brandon Clark is going to be like the Taj Gibson type coming off the bench as a two-way player. This is in a couple years maybe after Jonas has been traded or whatever. And they probably don't have their wing yet. Yeah. But good Lord, if they get a good wing, Brian. If they get like a legitimate forward in there. Oh boy. They could go right really quickly.
Yeah, it could be lights out for the NBA in a couple of years. So yeah. I'm excited to see, even if they do fall out of the playoff picture again like they did last year, I'm excited to see how they develop this year. Like, yeah. I think that's more important than wins and losses at this point in their team building stage.
Right. And before people like will add me on Twitter and go, well, they already have their free and Justice Winslow, I'm talking about a guy who can stay healthy.
Right. We just, again, we don't know what he looks like. Or no. What he, I mean, he hasn't played basketball in over a year.
His last basketball game was, yeah, January 8th, 2020. And that was actually, and before that, it was in December 4th of 2019.
Yeah. So almost 2 years.
Oh, God, that's horrible. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap up, Mort, with the Golden State Warriors, who have been exhumed after their first two losses. Everyone left them for dead. They've come back to life with a big win over the Lakers on Monday. Mm-hmm. And then they just pounded the Spurs, who we said a lot of good things about earlier this episode. They beat them by 22 last night. Are we going to fall for Andrew Wiggins?
Nope, I'm not doing it.
I might be.
No, I might be. Mm-mm. I'm not falling for that one again. Like, I think Keith Smith, friend of the podcast, he actually brought this up on Twitter. Like, oh, this, like, Andrew Wiggins is playing well. And I was like, I'm not falling for that again. And he goes, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me more than that, I'm an idiot.
I might be an idiot then.
Yeah, it's. I'm not there, Brian. No. You will have to. You'll have to ride that boat without me.
Okay.
Because the boat that you're riding is going to take you to the Titanic, and it's not going
to
look.
It's perilous. I'm not excited to be here. But right. He's just showing more of a well-roundedness, more of the well-roundedness that we've wanted to see from him for a while now.
Sure. But you know what? When I see Golden State fans argue that he's now turned into an elite defender...
Oh, no. No. I'm not going that far.
Okay. No, but so maybe what you're basically saying is the goalpost has you know, changed for Wiggins. Like, you're not expecting him to become the superstar that he was supposed to be.
No, definitely not.
Okay, cool. What is your expectation, then, for Andrew Wiggins?
Like, productive starter would be an upgrade over what he's been. I mean, he put up big numbers on a bad team in Minnesota, so that's great. Right. But, like, you know, a contributing member to an actually good team.
You know, I mean, okay, but that is still so sad considering what he's earning and then considering how much, you know, people crap on Tobias Harris, for example.
Like, yeah. No,
he's what you're just describing, like a really good stable starter. And it was like, no, he's overpaid. Rah, rah, rah. And everyone's like, yay, Andrew Wiggins. Like, no, what the hell? Like, that doesn't
well, add up. I mean, Andrew Wiggins is never going to return positive value on that contract. The sooner you divorce his contract from how he's playing, the better.
Yeah.
Because if you remain fixated on that, you're never going to be satisfied. And if you remain fixated on, oh, this guy was the number one pick, he should be the next LeBron, you're never going to be satisfied. He is not going to be that player. Right. But again, if he could be like the number three guy
I'm out.
A good team.
I'm still out. I'm not even going to play the what if game with Andrew Wiggins. Okay. I am done. I am done with that. Look, if he turns something around, good for him. I'm not going to jump the bandwagon here on that. I'm not going to be a first mover. I'll be the old guy who's like way too late into Facebook, who in like 2017 is going to go, oh, this new media of Facebook, that sounds interesting, because I'm not going to fall for that Andrew Wiggins thing. Like, he can get established with the other communities. That's fine. If you want to believe in him, okay. Then after he's become good and consistent, then I'll join. I'll be late for the party, but I don't care.
There's this thing called Bitcoin. Have you heard of it? All right. Well, let's talk, since we can't reach a consensus on Wiggins. Can we talk about Draymond Green?
Him and his 4.8 points per game.
So he's gonna. I feel like he's gonna be a litmus test in terms of this. If you how you judge Draymond Green this year, it tells me how much you actually watch the Warriors.
Yeah.
Like if you were just going by the box score, because you're right, production wise. Five points, seven assists, five rebounds, 35.6% shooting. Not great.
But right? The defense, man.
The defense, and then, like, maybe I've just caught a couple games where they have a camera on him. Like, it was the Lakers game on Monday where he's over, like, it was on, I forget who was shooting free throws. But he's, like, in Wiseman's ear during the game telling him like a very specific thing about like you have to attack Marc Gasol in this matchup. It's one-on-one. I like you in this. Like go attack him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't put much value in, you know, young team needs Ben Gordon on a $60 million contract to be the veteran locker room leader. Because like Ben Gordon doesn't have that kind of cachet. He's probably just out to go get his own, put up 18 points a game, and then get another contract later. Draymond, as a three-time champion, has his financial future secured.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to be, like actually be the locker room mentor that everyone like has a fetish over. I think this whole team got turned around the second he came back. Like they've just been so much more competitive because he is really the heartbeat of this team. For as good as Stephen Curry is offensively, and for you know for what he does to the Warriors in terms of his gravity with his spacing, I think Draymond Green is just like when you have this guy on the floor, you can't half-ass it because he's going to come scream at you at the first possible opportunity.
Right. I mean, I've been down on Draymond before, not just because of his antics and whatever. I do think that there was a time, you know, during Golden State here where he just did not live up to what he should have lived up to. Like he wasn't in shape. His you know his intensity was pretty hit or miss. He would give up like wide open layups. Like he was way too timid an offensive minded player. But I think after having gone through all that and just seeing him go into this whole mindset of, okay, you know what I am now. I'm not a scorer. I'm not a guy who needs to, you know, stretch the court. I'm not this, I'm not that. Then what can I be? And then he just does those things to utter perfection is probably the right play, even if it looks like a very crappy box score sheet every single game. Because he's like the ultimate advanced metrics guy. Like he's and I think the heart that you're talking about and like just the communication and all that, you're right. What I was scared of, I think, was him getting tired of being the emotional heartbeat and being like the energetic guy. Because we've seen players before just completely burn out because they always had to keep that energy level up. And then when you hit year 10, you're like, dude, I'm old. I don't have that in me anymore. I can't do that. Like Joakim Noah, I get there were some physical issues, but like you could just sense there was a time when he just like, nope, I can't be bothered. I'm an old guy now. I just want to hang back and have sex with my girlfriend. Like, you know, I think he literally wrote that on Instagram post.
That's awesome.
But yeah, which and hell, I don't blame him. Like that's you had a productive NBA career. Why not? Like you've earned that. But Draymond now, I think he went through a period where he just kind of checked out, where he just kind of like said, I can't do this, and then he got that thirst again.
Last year he was out. I mean, when Steph went down, he knew it was a rebuilding year. He checked out immediately, and I don't blame him. I mean, you're coming off of five straight finals runs,
right?
You know,
the year before with KD though,
when he possibly led to KD leaving the Warriors,
and something like that. That is not something I think is an asset, regardless of how you know everyone tries to spin it. I don't think that's a good asset. Like that's if Draymond is the direct cause for KD leaving, you know, you're as an NBA franchise, you're putting a cap on how good you can become.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a loose cannon element to Draymond. There has been for years. I mean,
right.
You know, kicking LeBron in the nuts and getting suspended and ultimately leading to you choking away a 3-1 lead is also not great. So there are certainly some things that you could point to earlier in his career where you're like, I bet he'd like to have that back. But I don't know. I think the mentorship that he's giving to Wiseman in particular, and I think it's going to make Wiseman a better player. I mean, Wiseman's been good so far, and he's getting better as the season progresses. We'll talk about rookies soon in a whole other episode, because I think there's a lot of these guys deserve praise for how they've kind of hit the ground running in these unprecedented circumstances. Here's a ridiculous thing with the Warriors, a fun stat. They have two players with an above average PER right now. Stephen Curry's at 22.7, Eric Paschal's at 19.3. Wiseman and Wiggins are tied for the next highest at 14.0.
Right.
And they are still 8-6. Klay Thompson is not coming back this year.
Nope.
But do you think this Warriors team, which is currently tied for fifth in the West, do you think they're going to not only make the playoffs, but could they win a playoff series? Not against one of the LA teams necessarily, but let's say they stay in the 3-6 mix. Could they beat a Utah or a Phoenix, or, you know, if Dallas and Denver get back into that mix as well? Could they beat one of those teams?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about Utah. Then again, they have Steph Curry, and, you know, remember what I said earlier about Damian Lillard. Just take that and replace that with Steph's name. I mean, see, that's the thing, right? Steph Curry alone could just swing games and series like that. So I can sit here and go, no, I because when I look at that team, I don't see a team that's as talented and as good as Utah, for example. But at the same time, Steph can come out and just, you know, hits 8 threes per game. And average 40. I mean, you don't know. This Phoenix Suns, that's a great test, I think. I would probably fear the Warriors if I'm the Suns. I think that's a team that could really give me a fright. Just because, I mean, what do you do against Steph? What do you do against the energy level of Draymond? Like, who do you really have to throw that at them? Like, yeah, you can probably throw Mikal Bridges on Steph here and there, and then rotate him with Chris Paul, but it's still Steph. I mean, as soon as he just enters the half-court line, like, that's a shot.
I actually now really want to see that series, because then CP3 could get revenge after the Houston hamstring strain.
Yeah.
He could finally get Chris Paul over Stephen Curry in a first-round playoff series in which both teams don't advance much further than that.
Right.
But, no, I think that's a good call, Phoenix in particular. I would struggle to pick the Warriors against most teams that I think they'll be in the mix with, but
right.
As you said earlier, I mean, we'll see where the league is in 50 some games at this point. You know, it could be every roster could be down to two-way players.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always a risk, especially this year.
Yeah. All right, Moore. Well, that is a good place to wrap up. Thank you, as always, for listening and joining us today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Also, a reminder that we are being supported by Manscaped, so get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use the code NBAPOD. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.